Coming up next on KSEO and KOMY, it's hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSEO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Why do we never get an answer?
Yeah, why don't we ever get an answer, huh? Okay, this is the Dr. Future Show, and we're going to cover some fun topics this week. All of our favorite stuff is in the news today, including quantum teleportation. New breakthrough there. Also, a new type of nuclear battery for your portable devices. Just what we always wanted. Here on the Dr. Future Show. Yes, and Mrs. Future is at the controls over here, making sure our volumes are right and commenting when necessary.
That's right. I'm here to put the brakes on the spaceship if we get too close to an asteroid. That's my job. I'm happy to do it.
Good. Well, you're going to like the second hour.
Can't wait.
We have a guest. We have an Austrian journalist.
Yes.
A guest who's been investigating a very strange phenomenon on this planet.
Yes, for about 12 years, too, with a very skeptical and yet scientific point of view.
Yes.
We're just going to tantalize you with the mystery, but it's going to be a very interesting second hour.
Meanwhile, we'll do our best to make this one kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah. I'm very happy about this week's links, boy. Yeah, folks, dude. If you want to see some of the fascinating research that Dr. Future did for today's show, go to our website, which is drfutureshow.com, drfutureshow.com, and go to the links page, and you will see that September 23rd is a banner day for fascinating, weird science.
Yeah, like, for example, twisting radio beams.
Twisting radio beams. Mm-hmm. Boy, I guess you don't need wires anymore, huh?
Well, we're used to sending them just straight. And twisting them seems to improve the amount of data that we can get.
So vortextual radio frequency.
Sending data at literally unheard of speeds over at USC.
Mm-hmm.
They had originally developed this twisted approach for light, and it worked pretty well there. Now they're trying twisting radio waves, and they're getting similar results.
Now, do you really understand how waves are being twisted?
Well, they're actually being vortexed out of the transmitter.
Uh-huh. I see. So the transmitter is kind of going, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
It's vortexing the signal. Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, 32 gigabits per second, folks. Yeah, 32 gigs per second. That's enough. That's fast enough to do 10 hour and a half long HD movies in 1 second.
Uh-huh.
30 times faster than LTE wireless.
Wow.
30 times. That's out of the gate here.
Great.
Talk about new evolutions. Who would have guessed that simply twisting radio beams would increase our data flow that much, 30 times over the existing straight radio waves, so to speak.
Vortexual.
You vortex the waves, you get 30 times the data.
Yes.
So I thought that was interesting. I found out about that this week.
It's really amazing. When you consider that scientists barely even knew that there was such a thing as radio waves just a couple hundred years ago, right? When
Tesla, the turn of the 19th century, 19th, 20th, not even that.
Yeah. Radio waves were 1920s, right?
Well, we had
We've
the first
come
studios
a
then.
Long way in the last 100 years. Now we're kind of looking at molecules with little tiny beams of light, and we're comparing light waves and radio waves and figuring out which one's faster. And
and we're vortexing the radio waves.
Right, exactly.
Maybe that's what the aliens would look for. You know, for a SETI, so they look for twisted radio waves.
Uh-huh.
They could tell when the civilization really went through some kind of hyperleap in evolution and intelligence.
All of a sudden they were twisting
the signal
the waves.
Was twisted radio waves. I mean, for real.
That's
real
twisted
waves. I'm not being metaphorical here.
Well, everything old is new again.
Well, maybe that's true, too.
Okay.
Nuclear batteries.
Nuclear batteries.
Yeah.
Let's see.
That sounds like something out of the 50s, doesn't it?
A little bit, but I think, didn't they have some kind of nuclear battery on the Martian landers, right? Don't Curiosity.
Well, nuclear generators. They had a nuclear. These are batteries.
Opportunity.
Yeah, these are nuclear batteries. Cell phones and cars and flashlights and stuff.
All right, tell us about nuclear batteries. They sound so dangerous.
Well, from what I can glean from their data, the first time they're using a water-based solution. So it's a water-based nuclear battery. What's the nuclear component? Strontium-90.
Mm-hmm.
Strontium-90.
Yes, that's a pretty commonly found radioactive element, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's relatively low grade. It's not something that's going to cause a nuclear blast or anything.
Right, yeah. You can kind of go down to the beach probably and get readings for strontium-90.
Yeah, I think it was like strontium-90 found in the grass across the world after Chernobyl.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, strontium-90. And they've been combining it with liquids to create a battery technology known as beta-voltaics. Beta-voltaics.
Hmm.
And they generate power from radiation. The basic ideas have been known since the 50s. We've heard about the magic of nuclear back in those days, and that was part of it. Isaac Asimov was a big fan of earlier concepts of nuclear batteries for our gadgets. Controlled nuclear technologies. The bigwigs in this field are saying that, well, controlled nuclear technologies are not dangerous, are not inherently dangerous, that's the term, unlike commercial reactors of today. If this really works and it's using nanotech, apparently they're using a nanostructured titanium oxide electrode. That's the stuff you usually find in sunscreens.
Mm-hmm.
So they're making electrodes out of it, and it effectively converts energy into electrons.
Effectively?
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of slow?
Well, I ran this by Dr. Nick Herbert, one of our consultants on the show, who's a quantum physicist, and he also had some training in atomic physics at Stanford. And he felt that batteries definitely would work and they could be safe. But the problem is that they're very low yield. They're very slow amount of power. He doubts that they could ever do something as significant as a Tesla.
I see.
Never mind a car battery.
You'd have to
carpet
a football field to turn on the lights or something.
They'd be slow. They'd be better for your cell phone.
What?
your nuclear batteries are better for the ones close to your body.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. Where are we going with this? Yeah, the small stuff, the stuff that doesn't take a lot of power.
All right, so the point is that we're investigating getting power from from nuclear sources. We're going smaller and smaller with our thirst for power.
And you know where this is from, Mrs. Future?
No.
The audience? You know,
tell me.
This is from the Show Me State.
The Show Me State?
Yes, it is. The nuclear batteries. University of Missouri.
Missouri. Leave it to them to come up with little teeny tiny nukes
for
batteries.
New version, nanotech version.
Well, I look forward to you showing me.
All right.
Meanwhile, let's take a little break here. Let's hear about the party on Rosie's show and a few other fun things from our sponsors.
That's right.
Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
From the incomprehensible brogue of the Highlands of Scotland to the scorching sands of the Middle East to the glitz of West Hollywood and finally to the hobbit-like atmosphere of the San Lorenzo Valley. This is the story of Rosemary Chalmers, former subject of Her Majesty the Queen.
Excitement, excitement, excitement. Becoming a citizen is a wonderful thing, and I'm thrilled to bits, and I would love you all to come and celebrate. We have many invited dignitaries that are coming because we want to talk about civic-mindedness and perhaps just pop that thought into your head about what you can do to make your community better. We're celebrating my citizenship this Friday, the 26th of September, from 8 to 9:30 a.m. So come on down to KSCO at 2300 Portola Drive. Have breakfast with us. It's red, white, and blue from 8 a.m. to 9:30. Hula and I hope to see you here.
Meanwhile, from our nuclear batteries to outer space, where this week's news has to do with astronomers, including some from our UC Santa Cruz Department in Astronomy, who have been investigating this very small little galaxy.
I see.
Very tiny. Our little universe here.
Nuclear and nuclear tiny batteries.
Yeah, for an ultra-compact dwarf galaxy.
And a dwarf galaxy, oh boy.
Go figure, our astronomers would be interested in this.
How big is a dwarf galaxy?
Ultra-compact dwarf galaxy. Well,
that doesn't sound very small.
Well, it's like 120 million stars, something like
120
that.
120 million suns.
That's a dwarf galaxy, 120 million suns. Mm-hmm. Just to give you a comparison, we have about 200 billion suns in the Milky Way. 200 billion. So we're talking dwarf here, 22 million stars.
Oh, gosh. That's right? Just tiny, right? Nothing.
But the thing is, what's really weird about this galaxy is that it's got a supermassive black hole that's really big.
Oh, boy. The smallest known galaxy has a gigantic black hole.
Yeah, like to give you an example,
this black hole. This is like a comedy sketch. You cannot make this stuff up.
No, right? I mean, my understanding is that our galaxy, the Milky Way, has a black hole that's about 2 million star systems across.
Okay.
2 million, you know.
2 million stars.
Stars,
the size
excuse me.
2
million
sun.
Stars. And that's pretty big, right? But this little dwarf galaxy that only has 120 million stars, guess how big its black hole is?
More than 20 million stars?
20 million stars as opposed to 200 billion. You know, you'd think the black hole would be proportional.
Okay.
No, their black hole is like 23 million suns.
Wow. That's
as opposed to
really
2
out of scale.
Million.
Hey, listen, the phones are lighting up. We've got somebody who'd like to make a little comment about water management tonight and somebody else. So shall we take a moment and say hello?
Okay, I just want to get that idea across is that it's got a massive black hole compared to ours.
All right.
In terms of our proportion.
I love it.
Very curious. So our scientists are studying this.
A tiny little galaxy.
It has implications.
A massive black hole.
It tells us much about the nature of dark matter and stuff like that. Anyway, let's get going.
Right. The nature of dark matter. And now, some comments about water management. Hold on just a sec.
Okay.
Well, hello, Marco. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Hi there.
I hear you have some vital information for us.
Involving
me. Oh, yeah. I always enjoy the show. I'm sorry to call with something off topic, but tonight the Santa Cruz City Council is meeting to increase the water rates, and the news reports keep saying that it's going to be a 50% increase over 5 years, 10% per year. But when one does the math, actually, because each 10% increase is also getting increased by 10% the following year, it's a 61% increase in the water rate.
So you think it's a little unfair and it should be protested. Now, you know, do you know how much of the percentage of the bill is paid for by the agriculture area or the citizens having to absorb the extra cost for water?
I do not. I know that agriculture certainly is a heavy user of water, but then again, if they don't use water, they can't provide us food.
Right. So it's a whole ecosystem.
Okay, well, Marco, did you want to ask people to show up and support, or are you just kind of sharing this information? What do you think people should do about this?
I have two things in mind. One is that when you hear reports and the government tells you something and gives you numbers, you might want to just check their math. And the other thing is maybe there are people who wouldn't get so upset as to go down there and protest tonight at 50%, maybe once they hear it's 60%. going down there.
Okay, so, that's true. No, we do not like bigger bills, that's for sure.
Anyway, I don't want to take up any more of your time, but thank you for letting me inform the public.
Oh,
no problem.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for calling, Marco.
Appreciate it. Take care. All right.
Okay, bye-bye. And should we say hi real quick? Hello, Gerard from Santa Cruz.
Gerard, hey, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, how are you today?
Great.
Enjoying today.
I was calling in regards to the small galaxy you were talking about and the massive black hole that was there. Well, it's obvious that the galaxy's small because the black hole's been chewing it to death.
Well, that's part of the theory is that it was a larger universe that was literally pulled apart, and what's left is the white dwarf. That's one of the theories.
The Sloan survey will tell you exactly how big, we're looking at a small part of what's really going on. What really needs to happen is more awareness needs to happen what's going on in New York and the environment and how we need to get a hold of the nuclear waste that we cannot control. We need to get a hold of that. Instantly. Mm-hmm. No, we cannot go with mini nukes. We can't go with bombing Iraq and seeing what's happening in Fallujah and the abnormalities that are going on. We cannot have that anymore. Okay? Mm-hmm. That has to end.
Yeah.
Little conversations are great, But there's more really pressing concerns really right now. And everyone's going, tra-la-la, everything's fine.
Well, so, we're not in the
tra-la-la. I have a great information. You know, I understand you guys have a great show. But I'm telling you, people need to wake up. Thank you.
Send me some data, you know. Send me some of your, what you think are critical articles on
he's
the topic.
Gone.
And I'll be, even if he's gone, I'll take a look at them. You know, I'll look at how they fit into the overall matrix of things that I consider important and how we think about reality, if you will.
Yeah. For the record, I do not consider reporting on things that are fascinating, profound, and expanding our awareness of the possibilities of nature to be going tra-la-la-la-la or ignoring the problems in the world. If anything, I feel like the problems of the world are pressing on us all the time, and it's really important to have balance. We have to feel good about ourselves to feel good about dealing with the problems in the world, and it's a very complex world, and the conversation about how to fix it is not one person can have that conversation. It takes all of us, and I think that's what talk shows are for.
That's it. So we have a ability to have you on stage for a few minutes and talk about your twisted radio beam, your twisted perspective on what's going on. No more twisted than mine, I might add, but in a different way, perhaps. We're seeing an evolution of artificial intelligence in our phones. Right, that's part of the iOS 8 upgrade.
Yeah, you think your phone's getting smarter?
Yeah, absolutely, it's getting
smarter.
What's
happening?
Well, Siri keeps getting better, for one thing.
Uh-huh.
I believe in Siri. I believe that we're heading in the right direction with that kind of thinking. But I think that Siri shouldn't be our only experiment. I think the Google equivalent is equally important, as well as even probably even more important than either of those would be a open source AI.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone who feels compelled to contribute to an understanding of intelligence can add to the equation.
Okay.
And then combine that with Arduino so our robots can work on those programs. And I think the open source maker movement is probably where the breakthrough is going to happen with all that.
Mm-hmm.
But our phones, meanwhile, are getting smarter.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I have this little thing. See if you can pull this up. This is an experiment where Jason Snell, a journalist who recently updated to iOS 8, and he was trying to look at the new feature from Siri, which instead of having to push the home button, you just say, "Hey, Siri." And as long as you say, "Hey, Siri," she'll respond to you if the device is plugged in. Okay? So what Jason did, the troublemaker, was he got three iPhones and he had them all ready to receive. And he asked the same question of all three of them. This is what happens if you have three iPhone 5s, it looks like, and one 6 Plus. They're all turned on to Siri with the AI in the iPhone, and she's asked the same question at the same time. Anybody's voice, anybody in the room that says, "Hey, Siri," could trigger off somebody else's Siri.
Yeah, that's the problem with talking to our computers. If we're all talking to our own computer,
it could create some interesting...
only understand one word.
Real-time comedic moments.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so here's what happens if you ask them the same question, three units right nearby.
Mm-hmm.
"Hey, Siri, send a text message saying we've done a horrible thing."
"To whom should I send this?"
"Mike Hurley."
"No message to my Hurley. No message to my Hurley. Send. We've done a horrible thing. We've done a horrible thing. Ready to send it? Ready to send it? Mike Gersberg or Mike Gordon?"
I don't know what you mean by Mike Gordon. Now message to Mike Hurley says, we've done a horrible thing. Ready to send it? I'm not sure what you said. I didn't get that. Would you like to say it? Cancel. Sorry, I didn't recognize that name. Never mind. Okay, I won't send it.
Now they all got that. See, that's a good thing. They'll all learn about, never mind. So if Siri is not doing what you want her to do, just say, never mind. A Dr. Future tip.
Okay.
And thank you, Jason Snell.
That is a funny idea.
Sixcolors.com.
It's like all computers bow to you at the same time. Okay, Al.
All the computers in the room are mine. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. I read an interesting thing in terms of old this week.
Yes.
I read a very interesting article on the mysterious case of the 113-year-old light bulb.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. So this light bulb has been running continuously since 1901.
Yeah, the average incandescent bulb, that's the old ones we're trying to get rid of, usually lasts between 1 and 2,000 hours. Mm-hmm. LEDs, of course, go between 25,000 and 50,000 hours. What a bump, right? But there has been a dangling from the ceiling of a California firehouse, a bulb that burned for 989,000 hours. 989,000 hours.
Boy, keeping those firemen up at night, huh?
For 113 years.
What?
It's kind of dim
at
this point.
They just don't make them like they used to.
You can say that again. since its first installation in 1901, it has rarely been turned off, and it's outlived every firefighter from the area, and it's been proclaimed the eternal light by General Electric experts and physicists who've studied it. Mm-hmm. So I have a link to the story of this amazing centennial bulb, and it raises questions about bulbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole technology of bulbs. A very good idea. This is a carbon filament, like most bulbs since then have not been made with carbon.
Well, people have analyzed this bulb and have looked at it, and you know, he was one of the competitors with Edison. Mm-hmm. He's a French bulb in design, so it's a little different. Yes. In design.
A little more dim, perhaps, but it lasts and lasts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fascinating story, and I thought I'd just mention that.
All right.
Check that out.
I like that.
If you like to watch crazy YouTube videos mm-hmm. that maybe have some redeeming value, I would suggest this link I have to frogs that are enjoying watching a video of bugs on an iPhone. You really get to see what's popular on Frog TV.
Yes, that's true. And talk about short attention span theater. Mm. Okay. The frogs, well, I don't want to
check it out.
The
they really are watching.
They are watching. They're really watching. They're taking it in. They're kind of wondering if they could scratch their heads. They scratch
see it.
Their
it's
heads.
It's just funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That means if we wanted to, we could make media for other species. And perhaps encourage interactivity, too.
Sure. I'm sure the future is full of a whole bunch of interaction with other species.
This just in from Frognet. Lay off of that dioxide. Sorry. Yeah.
The frogs are pushing the panic button. Mm-hmm. Lay off.
Well, it's true. If we have biosensors and ways in which we can communicate with other species, they, too, are collecting intelligence. They have all these sense organs that are feeding into the Gaian grid and... Mm-hmm. At some point, we'll be able to connect into that grid of multi-species intelligences and be part of it.
Sure. Yeah, I imagine the future will be a return to our connection with nature.
Well,
it's just that we're going to bring nature with us and create a bunch more sensors.
Well, hopefully she's going
to
bring
nature
us with
to
that, with her.
Communicate to us.
Yeah, it's a two-way street,
I mean, it's
to say
like
the least.
The neocortex part of our brain is the new part of our brain. It does all of the reductionist thinking, all of the analyzing, all of the verbal skills, but it doesn't really communicate back to the animal part of the brain.
Well, that's because...
It just takes information from the animals, but doesn't talk back.
Well, that's because the higher mind, which is not necessarily a local phenomenon, mm-hmm. considers the body to be basically a container.
That's true. And yet, it loves the body. It wants the body to come forward. And it has the capacity to find ways to get the previous apparatus of nature to understand better how we're going forward.
I agree. I think that's where science meets shamanism.
Right.
Personally.
That's it. And, well, we are nature, and mm-hmm. it's our job to make sure that all of nature is carried forward with us, right? We received this gift of life. We want to give it back in the future.
Well, as much as I understand her, I believe in a win-win situation. But she did create us to be the crazy monkeys we are.
That's right.
Sentient monkeys.
I
wouldn't stop there even.
There you go.
But I do think part of our consciousness is non-local and is
universal.
Universal and available to all of us. And it's kind of like a cosmic Google, if you will. Uh-huh. And it's our natural heritage to have access to such tools, not just priesthoods mm-hmm. or special groups of people, mm-hmm. you know, the Illuminati. I would agree. I think that's one of the great things about the American experiment that shows that much like how everyone can be lords and lords if they want to, and that the hierarchy structure is somewhat artificial. we can create a more equitable lateral distributed intelligence network of human consciousness.
Yeah. Well, we can certainly evolve a lot better. I mean, the internet is proof.
Yeah, an exo nervous system.
The more minds you throw at evolution, the more fun you can have as you go. It's really better to have a distributed model of power and intelligence than to have a hierarchical one that all feeds kind of one limited point of view at the top.
Yeah, and our computers, we're going to multi-core processors for a while now. So it's a distributed intelligence. I think that's another layer of society evolution that's going on right now. We have all the centralized models in place, you know, with the president and and such. So,
and those centralized models are our models. That's our planet. She has created all of these structures of intelligence to manage the resources. And all we need to do is just fine-tune so that those models are benefiting life.
Yeah,
you know, are
tweak it a little.
Benefiting all life on the planet.
It's like twisting light to get more data speed.
Yeah.
It's related.
Yeah.
You watch.
All right. Give us a good flag and we'll follow it. So
there's another cool thing to see. There's an animated music video that jumps across 14 iPhones and iPads in one shot. It's hilarious.
Boy,
that, I wish I could show that on the radio.
Multimedia,
but,
that's so check fascinating.
That
out.
That's creating it so that as your art piece, your canvas are all the screens around you. You can play with the screens and move them around and do things with them. And so the screens become part of the aesthetic of the art as much as what's on the screens.
Right.
Or as Marshall McLuhan once said, the medium is the message. Lighter massage.
All right, folks. So, yeah, you want to check out that link on drfutureshow.com on the links page, the animated video.
So how much time we have, Business Future? Two minutes?
No, okay.
Right. 1 minute.
Till the
break. Because, you know, every story can be told in 30 seconds or in 30 minutes or more.
Oh.
Right? So, you know, these are not trivial
concepts. Then you have time
concepts.
For two
I'm just bantering
if you
around
talk
here.
Fast.
Okay, this is pretty significant. This is a new type of wearable robot.
You're going to tell that story in 30 seconds?
No, maybe not. Maybe should I save that? Because you do have a lot to say on wearable robots.
I just think that's a great story. You shouldn't shortchange it.
Okay, all right. Well, let's go back to the other. You can work in your sleep. How about that?
Okay, yeah. That's a short story for sure.
Can you imagine working in sleep and waking up and getting a paycheck from work and you've done it all just because you were sleeping? Well, that's not quite the story.
I'm sure a lot of people would like to collect paychecks just for taking a snooze.
Yeah. Now, what scientists are more at on the level of that you can classify words in your sleep.
Uh-huh.
You know, they figured out that when people practice simple word classification before nodding off, like knowing that a cat is an animal or a flipoo isn't a real object, for example, their brains will continue to do that even after they're asleep. So you can get people to start classifying words.
Or then, doing some kind of automatic like, task, yes, no, thumbs up, thumbs down kind of behavior.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this a dog? No. Are you awake? No. Simple questions like that. Apparently, you can continue to do that even after you fall asleep.
Okay. Well, right, folks,
that's a 30-second.
We'll be right back. This is the Dr. Future Show on K.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. You've heard of the new wearables movement, of course. Like that's what Apple
Hottest
Watch
thing
is.
In techno fashion.
Right. Huh. The high end of that is, curiously enough, the high end of fashion is coming from the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering. The Weiss Institute, W-Y-S-S. Uh-huh. And that's at Harvard.
Okay.
And they were awarded a first phase $2.9 million follow-on contract from DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, to develop a biologically inspired smart suit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the soft exosuit.
Yeah.
Now, what's different from that in science fiction?
Well, like, this is different than, say, what you imagine if you think of avatars. Right.
Right? Avatar was actually the marine version of this was like an incredible robot that you would jump into the control seat of and control.
Right.
Not like that at all.
Yeah.
This is like clothes you put on. It's called a soft exo suit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to be worn comfortably under your clothes. Under your clothes. So like a like a super costume, right? Yeah, you
wear
like clothes.
Men in tights kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. It's more like a super costume. Obviously, we want our superheroes here. We want the suits to have special powers.
Right. And they're calling it a soft exosuit.
That's it.
I'd say it's a little more reminiscent of braces. Right? The kind of thing that they would
that Roosevelt
recommend.
Would wear. If,
yeah, that's yeah. Roosevelt wore. People who maybe don't have good control of their legs in the past would be fitted up with something like this.
But in the future, not wearing an exosuit would be missing out.
Yeah.
As, yes, initially exosuits would be used for serious military medical purposes. But well, then they will hit the more the culture, the mainstream world after that.
Well, I think when you watch the video about this, what's so fascinating here is that they really are taking a very different approach to exosuits in that they are making something rather than trying to emulate the motion of a leg by creating like a robot that works like a leg. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is letting the leg be the leg, and then they're coming up with something that will enhance it.
And amplify whatever movement you do.
Right. And so there's a really great video of a simulation where all of the muscles that are used in walking are displayed so that you can see how they light up and how when you're walking, it's like each hip is treating the leg like it's on a pendulum and it's swinging and it's just kind of contracting and expanding muscles in a very interesting way that I've never seen so well illustrated before. It's really well done.
Definitely it's worth seeing the video on this just to get the concept of how it works. So it doesn't use much power then.
No, and it's also designed in such a way that it doesn't put strain on the body. It's designed to go where the body naturally holds weight anyway. So they've got like the heavy battery pack is around the butt, right? Yeah. And the joints are along the long leg bones. It's not surrounded in any way. It's not a replacement for the legs. It's actually just meant to sense when the legs are moving and then give them extra oomph.
Yeah, it says it's made of soft, functional textiles woven together in a piece of smart clothing that is pulled on like a pair of pants and intended to be worn under a soldier's regular gear.
And not just soldiers, also for...
Everybody. Well, ultimately, yes. You would have a special suit for all occasions, for different professions, for sure. Firemen would want a certain suit that would be able to handle higher temperatures more easily, for example. Every profession will have its suit design, giving us all superpowers.
Yeah, that's the main thing, is that it's all in pursuit of superpowers through clothing.
Well, and probably through the influence of comic books as kids is becoming reality now. If science fiction become real, let's go back into our past, pull the coolest stuff forward.
Yeah, and, I guess this is kind of like minimalist Iron Man, right? You don't want the whole metallic suit that can get stuck in the mud, you know?
Sometimes
you want
I
something
go
that's kind of light that just makes you a little bit stronger, gives you more stamina, lets you lift heavier boxes.
Yeah, and if I can only jump 10 feet or so, that's okay. I don't need the full Monty all the time.
Yeah, and the other thing here is that this suit is meant to sense your body. You never had the sense in these other creations that the suit was actually paying attention to its wearer. It was a little more like a car. You were just supposed to drive it. It didn't know if you were there or not. It didn't care if you were drunk. Those kinds of things are a whole new layer in the development of the technology. It's getting the machines to actually know what's going on with the human being that they're
enhancing.
The feedback
loop. It's almost like the suit is alive.
Yeah.
You know, or at least it's got feedback loops, so it can pay attention to what's important to us.
Yeah.
It's a two-way street. As it becomes more alive, we have to pay more attention to it. But we kind of like to do that. I mean, you talk to race car drivers, they'll tell you the car is an externalization of their skin. Mm-hmm. It's an extension of humankind to include our technology as part of who we are.
Right.
Especially something as close as our vehicles.
Right.
Which is like the skin, I think. It's a good analogy.
Uh-huh.
So advanced wearable robot design.
Yeah.
Coming out from the Weiss Institute at Harvard University.
Yeah, and in addition to trying to help the military, they're also trying to come up with, they're working with partners to develop a medical version of the suit that can help stroke patients with, maybe they have an inefficient gait and could greatly benefit with walking assistance.
Yeah, so I would imagine you can program them too. They'll probably create it so that it could have a whole reconditioning exercise if you lost, you know, if you had a broken bone and you need to be reconditioned.
Yeah.
I'm thinking these devices would be probably excellent for that with the right programming.
Yeah. So, you know, it's so they quite can a cool collaboration.
Probably even exercise. Probably put on an exosuit that could exercise. Exercise.
There you go. Oh, for lazy people. That's going to be a big seller.
Well, I'm thinking out of the box here a little bit, but you know, the price would have to come down a lot.
Can you imagine like a vending machine? You put your quarter in and the suit just like goes to do the session for you and you just hold on until
hold on for dear
you
life. You're
going
to get your workout. The 7-minute workout. Then we take it down to 3.5 if you want.
Hilarious.
But be ready.
All right.
So exosuits, watch out. That's a concept I think is going to keep evolving.
Yes.
Remember, in science fiction is rich. Remember the still suits in Dune or Starship Troopers with Robert Heinlein?
Right.
I mean, that's...
Now,
so we're raised
here's
on.
The perfect article to follow that one with. Yeah. Is this car hacking the security threat facing our vehicles?
Oh, forget just car hacking. What about body hacking?
Yeah, but if your exosuit
body hacking
was suddenly
I've been hijacked.
Being
I know,
controlled
well,
by someone else,
exactly.
That could be a disaster.
Well, that's always going to be the case. All the security around remote control is going to become more and more important.
Yeah.
You know, as we evolve these technologies.
Yeah. Well, hijacking is a real thing in the when you automate the vehicles, you're going to have to figure out who's in charge, right?
All right. Well, let's look at these state-of-the-art thinking in car hijacking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Car hijacking. I really enjoyed the scene in this Amazon independent movie series, The Betas, right? Where there was a scene in The Beta where this young executive was offered a ride home in his boss's automatic car.
Yeah.
And he got into the automatic car and, you know, it sort of treated him.
Everything
to,
was perfect.
To the ride. Was, it was perfect. Okay. He was going
to
ride home even though there was no driver.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he's
relax,
about a block
enjoy.
Away and the car lets him know that it's rerouting.
Sorry, rerouting.
An island that's, you know.
I'm sorry, I can't let you out.
That's right. The doors are locked. You can't get out.
The car drives him onto a ship.
Onto a container.
On
he
a
gets
ship.
Loaded onto a ship.
It's shipped off to the billionaire's island who's financing their whole operation.
And when he finally gets out on the ship, the ship is being completely automated.
With
it's
robots.
Being controlled by robots that lift the containers here and there. It was such a joke.
That was very prescient, I thought.
That's where we're going. Get the machines to do the dirty work and we'll just take a ride. But we have to make sure they let us out if we want to get out.
Is that hijacking thing, man? It gets in the way of the perfect program.
Yeah. And yet this article is all about the fact that the car hijacking is going to be really easy because this is antiquated control of having integrity and authentication and those issues that make your computer safe.
Automatic
car is still not safe.
No, it's not. But we will design systems that will make it safe.
Of course.
I think the main thing is
those
who design it, you know, what's interesting here is that, you know, I've known both sides. I've known dark hackers and white hackers and law enforcement side and all that. And it is an interesting movie, right? And a lot of movies have been done about this whole hacker thing. But what I have noticed is that the hackers seem to have more fun than the law enforcement people, you know, or the white hats. They're so serious, and the other ones are having so much fun. And I'm just wondering if law enforcement had a little bit more Sherlock Holmes fun with this thing, it might make it more interesting, you know, where they enjoyed it's hard to do it when people are doing horrendous things, but the fun element is what, you know, what sometimes creates a breakthrough in thinking.
I mean, the way that the media glamorizes the hacker is kind of like the Wild West, right? It's the last freedom-loving individual rebelling against the system, the corrupt system. And yet, really, law enforcement is not about the corrupt system. Law enforcement is about those things that we need society to agree on. And those are the people willing to put their lives at stake to make sure that everybody's safe. Yeah. So,
I'll do the show on this. I know a number of law enforcement people I'd like to bring on.
Uh-huh.
That could be interesting. Okay, we only got a few seconds left, Mrs. Future.
Yeah, talk about next hour.
Yes, next hour we have on the line an Austrian journalist.
Yes, Peter Arthur Straubinger.
He's been a television journalist, Austrian television, and he's been all over the world on many stories, but this story is one after his own heart, a personal documentary that he has done on a phenomenon where people have stopped eating.
And they love it. It's all by choice.
Yes. Very interesting. Now, we're going to see whether this is real or what. How could this be?
Okay, folks, stay tuned for more Dr. Future Show on KSEO after the break, and CBS News and traffic and weather with Dave Michaels. We'll be back.